and welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and I am joined by Kurt Hogue, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We have a lot to discuss. A lot has happened since we last chatted, and quite honestly, more could be in the offing. Not that we know for sure, but the winter meetings here are getting started this week, and that means quite frequently, that means a ton of movement in Major League Baseball. The Brewers could be part of that as well, even though they've already made some pretty significant moves. We have to talk about that, Kurt. A lot has happened since we last chatted. Brent Suter became a member of the Colorado Rockies, so he's gone. The Brewers decided to trade Hunter Renfro to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Are we still doing that? Are we still doing the whole Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim thing?
Of California.
The Angels. For a trio of pitchers. And then the biggest, most significant move happening late last week when Colton Wong was dealt to Seattle for infielder Abraham Toro. And then more notably, outfielder Jesse Winker. So I think we could probably start with the most recent move because that is the biggest of them. Jesse Winker, outfielder, but not a great outfielder defensively, so probably more of a designated hitter going forward. A guy who's had a ton of success at American Family Field. A guy who's got pretty good numbers overall. Not last year, though. Not with Seattle. He struggled a little bit with injury and simply was not the player that he has been. But overall, pretty solid player. So I know we can't really talk about this move isolated from others because dealing Renfro opens a door, presumably, to get Winker, and we could talk about all that connection stuff. This trade wasn't received, I guess, with like a ton of excitement. You know, Colton Wong is kind of a guy who's aging, good offensive player last year, struggled defensively, but typically very good defensively. They got two players for him. That's a decent trade on the surface, but I guess I don't know. It feels like people are still a little bit down on the Brewers. So you looked at this trade. I think you're higher on Jesse Winker than a lot of people. So give me your thoughts right off the bat on this deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's you want a guy that can be an impact bat. And Jesse Winker was not an impact bat last year, but out of everyone on the roster right now, I mean, you look at his career numbers and that's what he's been and that's what he has the potential to be more so than possibly anyone else on the team. I think some of the underlying numbers last year were positive. We'll see how things will play out with the shift. Obviously, moving from Seattle to Milwaukee as a left-handed power hitter should help. I would not be surprised if he has a very good season with the Brewers this year.
Yeah, left-handed power hitter, like you said. This is a guy who hit 24 homers 2 years ago when he was an all-star with the Reds. The Brewers have seen him a lot since he was with the Reds for basically five seasons. And I thought he was definitely fast rising on his way to becoming one of the best outfielders in the NL Central. I don't think people understood how good he was. He had a really nice 143 OPS plus that 2021 season. But again, last year was so bad. Relatively speaking, he's still a slightly above average player, at least by the OPS plus metric. But you're talking about a significant drop down to 14 homers. He struck out 103 times. His batting average is .219, on base of .344, which is still fine. But, you know, I don't know if again, that screams big time offseason acquisition, and it comes at the expense of Colton Wong, a guy that they had just tendered. I guess we could go on that angle. When they tendered him, it is a possibility that they trade him, or I shouldn't say tender him, but picked up his option. There is a possibility that happens. I don't think that's where we thought they were going with it, but to turn around and move a guy like Colton Wong, I don't know. I guess does that part of it catch you off guard that they were so willing to part with him right away after picking up his option?
Let's take a look a little bit at the history of what this front office does. How many guys, whether it's through arbitration or multi-year contracts, how often do they reach the end of that deal?
Oh, not
and then
not
hit
often.
Free agency after their time with the Brewers?
Yes, that does not happen.
I don't remember exactly what the stat was, but I've compiled it. It was about arbitration, and I think maybe two guys have gone through all the arbitration years with Milwaukee since 2014 or no, since Prince Fielder left in 2011. I believe it was Carlos Gomez and Omar Narvaez was the other one, coincidentally. So it just doesn't happen. I mean, that's their philosophy. They kind of churn through the guys once they get to that point. And then part of it is, too, I don't think they've had a lot of players whose price tag it has made sense, you know, for them to keep instead of trading them all the way through arbitration. I think they've got a couple guys that if they don't extend them, they'll probably plan on keeping or paying for all 3 years of arbitration with Burns and Woodruff, though we can get to that later. But and the sort of that kind of logic applies to guys who have 1 year left on their contract, like Holden Wong did. I don't necessarily think the Brewers were in a place where they were committed to trading him when they picked up his option, but that was certainly a significant reason. I mean, you kind of look at what they did with Brad Boxberger. They had his option, but they wanted to assess the market first, so they waived him, and no one claimed him, and then the Brewers just let him walk because the market did not indicate that he was going to get $3 million or whatever the deal was, and then they waived Brent Suter as well instead of trying to tender him a contract and trade him. So I think the difference, though, with Wong's option is that there was a market, and the Brewers knew that, and you kind of assess where the rest of the second base market is, and they knew they could find a team for him, and the Mariners were very clearly a good fit and kind of emerged very early on as that team, and Jesse Winker worked out. So it was not a big surprise. You just kind of look at the way this team operates, and that can kind of guide your line of thinking, your expectations throughout the entire offseason.
I do think we were a little surprised that they even picked up the option on Colton Wong because he'd had a down year defensively last year. You know, kind of the thought process being that's an area where a team like the Brewers would typically save. And, you know, like then they – I guess in that sense it doesn't make it doesn't surprise me that they would actually – you know, move Colton Wong right away with a sort of a cost certainty there in the mix as well. Winker, there's a lot of directions I still want to go here, but Winker probably a DH just based on how he performed defensively last year, and that could have been a little bit of an aberration. But he's not a high level defensive outfielder. So again, they're doing this thing that frustrated me, and maybe I shouldn't be frustrated by this. Maybe this isn't really a thing, but I thought they boxed themselves into having Andrew McCutchen be the DH when they made him their big offseason signing last year. Andrew McCutchen was not great offensively, and they weren't able to get other guys, many of whom could stand to be DH. Or I'm talking about certainly Christian Yelich, Rowdy Tellez. They couldn't let those guys be the DH enough because Andrew McCutchen was taking that spot, and they treated him like a DH, a middle of the order hitter all year long. And I you know that at some point middle of the year last year, that was like He's not that guy anymore. And McCutchen did play a little bit of outfield, but the idea of getting somebody specifically to be DH, it does puzzle me a little bit. I know that a lot of teams have operated this way. It's just another position in the lineup, but it's also a flexibility option that I feel like a team like the Brewers would really make use of. Over time, they have been open-minded on positional flexibility and things of that nature. And for a team that doesn't roll with the big hitters financially, it's good to have people who can do multiple things. I don't know if having a guy that's just strictly your DH is really playing into that same philosophy. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he will be playing mostly outfield. I don't know if we even know that yet. But what do you think about that? Am I crazy for caring this much about that? It feels like maybe this is just my own pet theory and not necessarily something that's borne out.
I think you might be. I think you were burned by the Andrew McCutchen experience. I think that's what it was. I think seeing him hit it clean up every day at his age and be the DH when they had some other option. I think it burned you.
Mm-hmm. You might be right. I totally agree with you, Pop. Well, I don't know if I totally agree, but I do agree.
You're on to something, though. I think I don't. But I'm not. But the thing is, I'm not sure that Jesse Winker is going to be the DH every day. Now that's not that's different than should he be, because he was horrendous in the outfield last
bad.
Year.
Very bad.
And his career numbers are not good out there. And you've already got a guy in left field, so you'd be putting him in right field. And I don't know how that exactly would transfer over either, because right field is typically more difficult than left, especially in the way that outfield plays in Milwaukee. So I hesitate to say that they will commit to him as the DH every day. He's still pretty young, and they might try to see what they can get out of him in the outfield. But you've also got some really good defensive options in, you know, basically all your prospects, as well as Tyrone Taylor.
Right.
So, and who knows who else, you know, do they go get a true right fielder still? I don't think they do. I think their upgrades would be at catcher or second or third base.
Agreed.
But maybe there's still a chance that there's some interchangeableness there in terms of positions, but if Winker is the DH every day, it does leave the question again about where the heck is Keston Hiura fit in? Oh. And we only talked about that on every podcast this year. So
you know, it's funny. I swear to you, this is wrong. I hadn't given Keston Hiura a lick of thought through all of this. You know, it's like, okay, well, Luis Urias is going to flip over from third base to second base, where he's probably a better natural fit, even though I think he handled himself fine at third base. But just as an offensive profile in particular, it feels like second base is probably his home. And there's still some arm strength questions, I guess. Although, you know, again, he was okay. He was okay at third base. But the problem there is there's no free agent third baseman, really, for a team to consider an upgrade. So
not either, Justin Turner?
I don't know. Do you think Justin Turner at age, whatever, 38, 37, do you think he's a guy that they would truly go? I mean, they went for him. What was that, last year, 2 years ago? Were they seriously entertained signing him? Was that possible?
I think it all depends.
Yeah.
It depends on what the price tag is and if he's still there in you know, maybe a month from now.
Yeah.
That's generally how the Brewers will operate.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right about that. I shouldn't rule that out, but I don't know. I feel like he's just going to re-sign with LA or go somewhere. I don't know. It's hard to see. It's hard. That's just a fit. I guess I have a hard time seeing. He still had a 788 OPS last year, quality, but 38 years old, and maybe has a 1 year situation. I mean, a lot of that comes down to, you know, you just mentioned it, what they have in the minor leagues. This is another reason why you expect, or I would expect, Jesse Winker to be a DH. That you would expect Garrett Mitchell and Sal Frelick get a very good opportunity to play on this team. And to speak of the infield, Bryce Terang. I mean, this is a guy who has pretty much done almost everything you can expect in the minor leagues. He still has some power maybe to develop, but that's a guy who could play second base, and Luis Urias is your third baseman. I'm sure those guys are figuring into the picture somewhere. They're not going to leave all of those guys at AAA to start the year. Somebody among those three, at least, not even to mention a guy like Joey Weimer, one of those names is going to be on the big league roster to open the season and probably in the starting lineup. So that's just more evidence that I would think Winker will be the guy. Either as a reserve outfielder or just straight DH. So as far as what else they need to address, you brought it up, catcher and one of these two infield positions, second base or third base. I just think catcher is like the number one at this point with you know, in bright red lights. But I don't know. You know, Omar Narvaez will probably go elsewhere. They really don't have any options at all right now behind the plate. So I don't know. I don't even is Pedro Severino still in the organization? I suppose he is, right? Or did he get? He must have hit free agency at this point. I don't even know. Is it Mario Feliciano if the season starts today? Like, I don't even know what options they have. Are there other options that are still enticing on the table that you're looking at?
I think everyone's talking about Sean Murphy.
Oh yeah,
The caution I would throw to that is I have a tough time seeing the Brewers making the – I mean, right now the winter meetings are going on. Obviously, we are not there. We are recording in the podcast studio in Milwaukee.
Yes.
So I don't have a great feel for how things are going on the scene in San Diego at this moment.
But Sean Murphy's name is out there.
Sean Murphy is the name in the trade market right now. I mean, at any position, really. And there's a lot of teams that are vying for his services, and it's also early, you know, pretty early on in the offseason. So that, you know, those things combined would make you inclined to think that the price tag is going to be – it's going to be very high. There's going to be some sort of bidding going on, and you've got to out-offer – four or five other teams that are, you know, trying to contend and need a catcher. Does that sound like something the Brewers do?
Again, no. But you know what? Like, let's rewind to the big picture. Wouldn't it be nice if they did just like get involved on one of those names, one of those guys? Because a lot of people are critical right now, and this plays into all the moves they've made, Suter, Renfro, that they're truly just cutting costs. And I bristle at that a tiny bit. I don't think it's salary dumping in the traditional sense where a team is just trying to hit a bottom line dollar figure and they don't care how that affects competitiveness. I do think they're evaluating every player individually. And I do think they are trying to get the most efficiency out of their dollar, which I can understand. But I think somebody else put it, it's almost like they're in a contest to find the right math equation. You know, 80% of the incumbent at a third of the cost, or you know, half the cost, is a win in that regard. you know, we saw what they did in 2022. Were they a playoff team? They were close to a playoff team, but they ultimately fell short, and it was very frustrating because everybody seemed to be fine but not great at any position, and it seemed like that's kind of the ideal Brewers team, right? With the exception of the pitching, they had fine guys everywhere, and nobody was great. And they it would be kind of nice to just go get a great guy, and even if that means overpaying a little bit or, you know, taking a swing. It doesn't feel like that's happened certainly this offseason yet, and in previous offseasons I think you could argue the same, but that, yeah, it would just be nice if all of a sudden the Brewers are announced as the team that gets Sean Murphy or signs a free agent, you know, one of the top, even one of the top 10 free agents on the board. I know we've kind of talked about that a while. That's just not their MO, but, oh man, wouldn't it be nice to see them just swing for the fences and go get Sean Murphy?
Yeah, so what I'm hearing from you is that is just a frustration that basically, every move this offseason, and kind of even going back to last year, seems to have been defined by like a constant desire to, like, just a constant need to churn out as much value per dollar as possible.
Yes. Which, of course makes sense, right? Of course, if you're a small market team, that is absolutely a consideration. It just feels like,
yes,
it's
yeah,
only...
but at a point, good players you got to acquire good players.
Yes.
And sometimes that means spending capital in terms of prospects or money. And I understand why they're cautious though about, you know, maybe mortgaging, I mean, more of complete mortgaging, but selling the farm to acquire a guy like Sean Murphy. Now, I think Sean Murphy raises the ceiling of this team significantly.
You do?
But
interesting.
I do. I mean, I
maybe because he's still just a catcher, right? So, like, offensively, you can only expect so much, right?
But Sean Murphy is a very good offensive catcher, and yeah, he's an incredible defensive catcher. So it's just, yeah, it's tough to find a guy like him at that position, which is why the A's are smart to get as much as they can for him and turn it into a sort of a bidding war. But, I mean, I guess it depends on what the offer is. But if it's, you know, say Frelick and Jefferson Caro, and then, I don't know, you know, if it's Frelick, Caro, and maybe like Carlos Rodriguez.
Sure.
Would you do that deal?
Well, I don't know. No. I don't know, man. I don't know. You're right. That's a high bargain for a catcher, even one who is going to upgrade that position significantly. I think if we take them at their word that they're not going to move on from Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burnes, I think that they probably have a pretty, you know, if Freddie Peralta stays healthy, the window is still pretty wide open for next year. So in that sense, yeah, I think you probably do make that deal.
All right. There you have it. JR wants to go for it.
I don't think the Brewers would make that deal.
And the Brewers, I don't.
They wouldn't even. I don't know if they'd even hang up. You know, they might.
I don't think that deal gets it done. Is part of.
Oh,
the,
really?
Is part of the dilemma there, but.
Oh, that's tough.
I would think the A's would demand more and would command more in a trade. But the sense that I get from this current front office, from conversations that have been had, is that not only are they you know, obviously into this model of sustainability, but they think that their current this farm system is going to be that group that allows them to maintain that sustainability.
Interesting. That would be different from how most evaluators feel it. You know, they view them as maybe middle of the pack, right?
I guess, but how many teams have? And I guess it's the lack of pitching maybe, yes, that puts the Brewers in the middle of the pack. But yes, in terms of position players, they're pretty well set. I mean, they've got the high end guy with Churio, and just a ton of guys that could be, you know, solid floor impact players as well.
Yeah,
are close to the big leagues.
I guess that's true, and a lot of them are outfielders. But yeah, they seemingly have the capital to make at least another minor move, if that involves one of those. You know, we talked about Mitchell, Joey Weimer, and Sal Frelick. They're not all going to be able to play. So one of them you would think is either going to move to a new position, or one of them is going to be traded. You know, like they're not going to rot at AAA forever. Those guys are if not big league ready right away to start the year, they're going to be big league ready very shortly thereafter. Garrett Mitchell obviously already has big league experience, so that's interesting. Let's go talk a little more about Hunter Renfroe, which kind of, it's funny that we don't talk about him much in the first 20 minutes because he was like their best offensive player last year. And that's arguable, but you know, his 126 OPS plus was as good as anybody on the roster. That's also the best he's ever had in his career. Now, he only played 125 games, had a couple injuries. He's got a great arm, but I don't know if I would say he's a great defensive outfielder. He's fine. And for the offense, you certainly put up with it. But I wonder, you know, he was 30 years old. This is now going to be, with him being traded to the Angels, his fifth team in 5 years. I interpret this, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, I interpret this as a situation where they were thinking about non-tendering him anyway, because the guys they got back, the pitchers they got back, you know, role players maybe, but not, certainly, there's certainly no difference maker of the bunch. You might see a couple of them in the bullpen this year. But it seems like this was a move where they thought they might move on from him, that they didn't feel, again, they didn't evaluate that him going forward would be worth the money that he was due to make. And they said, well, instead of just non-tendering him, we'll keep him for now, and then we'll move him for some parts. And I don't want to denigrate what these three pitchers could be. Like, you know, Jansen Junk, and you wrote about this, showed some improvement over the last couple of years and maybe could be a pretty reliable guy out of the bullpen. And another guy in the deal is sort of the Brett Suter replacement. But it felt like they moved on very quickly and kind of too easily from their best hitter last year. And maybe that's the prudent thing to do. You know, maybe a guy who's 31 years old, you cannot rely on him to replicate his career best season, at least as OPS plus goes. But you know, five teams in 5 years is a little bit of a red flag. You know, what is it the teams don't want in Hunter Renfroe? I guess that's something you consider as well. But that felt like a move that gets made by a team that is, in fact, cost conscious, that they are not going to take a risk, the minor risk, of having Hunter Renfroe drop down from what he was this past year. How do you look at all this?
I think we have to view it in the context of the entire offseason. Because if the Brewers don't do anything with that, what, $12 million that they were going to have to spend on Renfroe, you know, if they don't upgrade notably elsewhere on the roster, and they just gave up Hunter Renfroe for what I think essentially amounts to pitching depth, maybe one of these guys pops, but I'm not super convinced it happens. It's not going to be a good move unless they spend that money elsewhere in a way that actually impacts the team. Not going to get Andrew McCutchen again. Not getting a player like that. They have holes, I guess, maybe not obvious and glaring holes like we've talked about, but I mean, maybe catching is one. But they've got spots that they need to upgrade, and they can sort of, I guess, you know, between the prospects that they have and I guess maybe Jesse Winker now, put together the equivalent of, you know, what you'd expect out of Hunter Renfroe. He's also coming off a career year. But that return does not indicate that there was a ton of a market for 1 year of Hunter Renfroe at that cost. So that also, you know, kind of makes you wonder, okay, is it worth it then? If, you know, you can churn out a year of value out of him. These are the questions, JR.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the Brewers, they traded Jackie Bradley Jr. to get him, which was sort of a net negative. So that's why it's maybe a higher prospect in Alex Benelis, a guy that both of us got to cover in high school when he was at Oak Creek High School, going the other way, more highly regarded than maybe the guys coming back. But, you know, three pitchers are three pitchers, you know, and there have been deals in the past, a different style of deal, but like the Adam Lind trade that brought you Freddie Peralta when all the pitchers were 19 years old. Every now and then, all it takes is one of them to stick for that to be a good deal. Again, it's just about like subtracting from an offense that no one is going to be blown away by, subtracting your best hitter, even if it means saving a little bit of money. I mean, I guess it's not an insignificant amount of change, like you said, the $12 million that he would have been owed. Much less money would have been offered to Brent Suter, who is now a Colorado Rocky. He made $2.7 million last year with the Brewers. He'll make $3 million for a one-year deal with Colorado. This is an interesting one because, you know, Brent Suter is not a world beater. He certainly was awesome in 2019 when they went to the wild card game. He was among the best pitchers they had in the bullpen. He's not that guy, though, long term. He's, you know, 33 years old. He's probably gotten the absolute most out of his talent and ability than he possibly could have. So I understand that it's on paper. Here's where I don't understand it. This is coming from a little bit of a biased point of view because, you know, when you're covering a team, you don't know any of these players. You don't really get to know them, but you do get glimpses of them. And Brent Suter is an awesome guy by the glimpses that we've gotten of him and by the things he's committed himself to. And he is a fun-loving, excellent personality, super easy to talk to. And you did get the sense that last year when this team was kind of just going through it and floundering for the final 4 months of the season, he was kind of doing everything he could to create some sort of cohesiveness, some sort of good energy. Take that for as much as you want. Maybe you think that has no place and, you know, has nothing to do with success in Major League Baseball. I think there's a case for that. But also, you know, he was different from a lot of the guys in that clubhouse and has been different and in a very positive way, in my opinion. And I don't know if they have a guy to take that place. And, you know, we've sort of informally talked about this, that winning is the only thing that really matters to have the clubhouse be at peak morale and peak cohesiveness or whatever intangible substance you need to be good at Major League Baseball. But Brent Suter is a positive. There's very little negative about him. You know, he's not going to strike out everybody every time. He throws 90 miles an hour. But he offers something that you can't just get somewhere else. And again, maybe you don't need that thing, but I am surprised that they let him walk for almost next to nothing in the grand scheme of things when there's no obvious, you know, outside of Willy Adames, who I would say is the closest thing, there's really nobody else that kind of brought that energy. And I don't know, if I'm if I'm looking at this Brewers team, it's like, well, hopefully the wins happen because otherwise I don't know where the energy is coming from. I don't know where the sort of good vibes are coming from, Kurt. I don't know. Maybe I overvalue good vibes, but those are some good vibes going to Colorado right there.
Yeah, what is the war for good vibes?
We do not have a good formula to assess good vibes, because if we did, Brent Suter would be among the most valuable pitchers and, you know, the most valuable left-handed relievers in baseball.
So 3 million Brent Suter is not going to get 3 million on open market, probably. Which means the Brewers definitely aren't going to be the ones to pay him $3 million on an open market. But however, I do agree with you. I think that in a baseball context, $3 million is marginal enough, and Brent Suter is good enough. I mean, look at his career ERA plus. What he's got a above average ERA. I think every season of his career. Right. I don't have numbers in front of me, but. So don't quote me on that. But I feel pretty confident in that fact, even when he wasn't so great this year. And now there are some indications that some of the stuff is no longer playing up as well as it used to.
Yeah,
which is a legit. They're like, there's a legitimate baseball reason concern to pay him that money, which would be, you know, which would become guaranteed, and then he's got no options. Then what happens if you have to cut him? In the middle of the season because performance isn't there. So, like, I get it from the baseball standpoint, but Brent Suter means a lot to this team. He's meant a lot to this team. I think it sends a message to the fans that is not the right message to send. And I just think $3 million is marginal enough that you could pay that to Brent Suter and. Or find a way to work out some sort of deal with him instead of just letting him know he was waived. You know, see if will he cut a deal to stay? Who knows?
Yeah, and business is sports and all that. You know, you have to subtract some of the emotion out of it. But I hear what you're saying. He did have a below average ERA plus in 2018. He is at 92. That was the year that he did by far the most work because there was a lot of starts. He started 18 games that year, so that might be a little apples to oranges comparison. And in 2019, he only worked 19 innings. He was hurt most of the year, but he came back and he was unbelievable. 0.49 ERA, 4-0. That was a wild time. Yeah, there's some backsliding. He's still above average last year, but just barely. And you know, you could see this going downhill. I don't know, man. I don't know that. That's a cold one. And I mean. Again, if the Brewers come back and have a very improved bullpen from what they had last year, nobody will be remembering this maneuver. No one will be worried that Brent Suter will be fine in Colorado, of course. But this is a team that was very close to the playoffs and needed kind of everything around the edges to coalesce to get them over the hump, those last one or two wins. And I feel like Brent Suter is a subtraction, especially if you're saying we just don't want to pay $3 million for a reliever who's a quality, slightly above average reliever. You know, that's... That is seemingly the message that's sent. But who knows? This could be a completely different bullpen. Taylor Rogers could be back for all we know, Kurt. You mentioned Trevor Rosenthal.
Rosenthal.
That would be That would be something else. But what if he comes back and he's awesome? I could totally see that happening.
Taylor Rogers or Rosenthal?
Both of them. Both of them. I could see them just crushing it. 7, 8, 9 into Williams at 9. I could see that.
So if we could Taylor Rogers for a moment.
Okay. Let's
his strikeout numbers were alarmingly good when he was with the Brewers.
Yes. He also gave up home runs at a rate that was unlike anything he had done in his career.
And he hit every other batter. And walked a bunch too. It was quite the year or half year for Rogers with the Brewers. So
it's like, pick which part of this is sustainable. Did the Brewers tinker with him to get him to that point, or was it just like a crazy 2 month stretch where it's never going to happen again? He's never going to give up all those home runs again. Like I don't know. I felt this way about Jonathan Scope after the 2018 season, and I'm pretty sure I told you about this when. They cut ties with him very quickly after 2018. Most fans were like, good riddance. He was terrible with the Brewers. Of course, he was. But I always felt like, man, what we've seen in 2 months is so different from everything else in his career. And sure enough, he came back and I don't even know. Was he with the Twins?
He was with the Twins the next year. Yeah.
And he's been with the Tigers. And, you know, like now, I think he's either out of baseball or released. Or like he's gotten to that point now. But for the last 4 years, he's been a solid middle infielder. Not maybe the Brewers felt like they could do better anyway, but I thought that was a little bit of an overreaction that they moved on so quickly, and I feel like that was a little bit borne out. And now granted, they had Keston Hira coming up through the wings, and they thought he was the second baseman of the future. So like, you get it. But should we talk about Keston Hira? Should we go into?
Yeah,
like,
what do you want to talk about?
I really feel bad that I haven't given him thought in any of these conversations. He was also one of the team's best hitters last year, even though he comes with a high amount of strikeouts. Is he on this team next year?
I think he's on this team. Yes,
I think so too.
I don't see there being much incentive to move him right now, but there is there's clearly some sort of rift between how the organization views him and then maybe his production even last year. Mm-hmm. The strikeouts are still too much. That's just a fact. And it seemed clear how they viewed him. You know, when a month and a half there maybe, there was this roller coaster ride of basically like, okay, Keston Hira, you have to homer to earn your lineup spot in the next day. You know, it'd feel like, okay, Keston just went 1-for-3 with a homer. Okay, he's in the lineup the next day. And then he gets 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts and he sits. There was no consistent playing time to it, like no rhyme or rhythm to it at all. Mm-hmm. And it's been a top-down kind of view of him as a player coming from the front office on down, is that there's – you know, a lot of the lack of Keston Hira, I believe, that's where it comes from, is there's too much strikeout there from the way organization sees it to consistently play him.
All right, man. I feel like we've kind of reached a point where we could, I mean, with the winter meetings, there could be reason to podcast again in the next few days, 10 minutes. Yeah, who knows? I'll wrap it up here. You did do sort of a look back at the top 10 prospects in the Brewers system a couple weeks ago. Jackson Churio, we mentioned. I still think we probably have to talk about him at some point. Like, do we think he gets on this team at some point in the 2023 season? That still feels like a long shot, but not that much of a long shot. You don't think so at all?
I don't think so at all.
You don't see that.
Although I do think he starts at Biloxi.
Yes.
So that isn't within the realm of possibility for most prospects. I just don't think that the Brewers will be – like, they've been very aggressive about pushing him, but I separate that in my mind from rushing him to the big leagues.
Who else is on this prospect list that you really think we need to start paying attention to? Because Jackson Churio is not a name that any of us had said – I mean, the people who like knew the deep reserves of the Brewers farm system knew him, of course. But we weren't talking about Jackson Churio at this time last year. And now he's one of the biggest prospects in baseball. Stuff happens quickly. I'm not expecting another meteoric rise on that level. But who else aren't we talking about that we need to be talking about?
I think there's some talk about this guy. So it's not like no one's talking. Who am I going to say?
Jacob Mizorowski.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. I've been – you have seen –
I can just read your mind is what it is.
Yeah. So what am I going to say about him?
We don't know a lot about him because he hasn't pitched in the minor leagues yet. or at least did he pitch a little bit at the end?
I think he had two innings with Carolina at the end of the year.
So like virtually nothing, but the profile is incredible. And a guy who was sort of a remind me how he was drafted. It wasn't a first round pick, but
second
like,
round pick.
Okay, so second round. Yes. I wasn't sure if that was like a compensation rounder that eludes me off the top of my head right now, but somebody who could have been a first round pick with the stuff he's got.
Yeah, with the stuff for sure. And the Brewers had to pay over slot for him. They saved a bunch of money at a bunch of other places basically because he had a ton of leverage. He was, you know, only a second-year player at Crowder College, which is the same JUCO that Aaron Ashby went to. I believe he was an LSU commit, so he had a pretty hard line in the sand and say, okay, I can go to pitch at LSU for 1 year and then come back to the draft and be a top, you know, one of the top three or four college arms maybe with his stuff. So, only those two games at Carolina, but JR, from everything that people that saw him at in fall instructional league said, oh boy.
Yeah, and with the fact that, you know, we just mentioned it, there aren't a lot of top flight pitchers. Carlos Rodriguez, you mentioned earlier, is one of them as well. But they don't have guys ready to be big league pitchers.
It is very difficult, not even within the Brewer system, but just in general, to look at what a 19, 20-year-old guy and be able to legitimately see frontline starter potential. Now there's some things that he has to work out. The command is numero uno. He needs a better third pitch. It could be that changeup, maybe, because right now it's mostly fastball slider, and the curveball is not exactly a great pitch for him. But the kid was throwing 101, 102. His command was much improved this fall. And if he puts those two things together, there's so much room for just margin for ways to be a really good pitcher if you have that fastball and that, you know, basically any decent command at that point. Just so many possible paths to success. Now they just need to hone down on his delivery, make it more repeatable. He's got long limbs, I think like 6'7" or something. So finding a way to make that delivery something he can do over and over and over again is key. But there's a lot to dream on there.
The Brewers have sort of said through national media writers that they are not going to move Willy Adames as well, but primarily the two names everyone wants to know about, Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns. Do you believe them at this point? I mean, I don't. As Doug Melvin used to say, I don't know why they'd be motivated to move them at this time, but do you think that is the case, that both of those guys will in fact be here to start the 23 season?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
I never fully understood all of the talk around, you know, all the rumors around them being moved. I'm sure that teams were offering, and you know, the Brewers would be foolish to not listen to those conversations. But as you mentioned, the Doug Melvin motivated to move them line, I never got the sense that the front office was motivated to move them unless someone was motivated to move heaven and earth to acquire them. And that just doesn't seem like legitimately heaven and earth type offers is what it would take. And I don't think teams were in the ballpark to move that, especially in the offseason when like, you know, starting pitching just is not as scarce in the offseason as it is during the season, like at the trade deadline. Now, there's not many Corbin Burns out there, but there's just a lot of other guys that you can you have other ways to acquire. And we've seen that the price tag, though, this offseason is quite high for the starting pitching market. I think what Zach Eflin got, $45 million or something like that?
Yeah. So, I saw that because he was a sneaky, like, oh, that'd be a good addition for the Brewers, and you saw those numbers come through.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, no, that's not what I expected at all. Well, I probably should have, actually, looking back on it. All right, Kurt, any last thoughts before I send you away?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Yeah. Well, we will, like I said, I can't promise this is their only pod of the week because winter meetings are afoot, and there could be some fascinating news. There could be nothing. Maybe it's a Rule 5 pick. maybe they go back to the Rule 5 pond No one expects that to happen, but we will perhaps be back with you then soon. Otherwise, as news breaks here in the off season, it is December. Long, cold off season still awaits us. So we will get back in touch with you when news allows. Thanks for listening to Microbrew. Check us out on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Find everything we have at jsonline.com. Don't forget to sign up for our Brewers newsletter, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye, everybody.